Okay, so I'm sitting with Claudia Montaigne, and welcome to the radio.
Yes.
And I was thinking it's funny welcoming you here because you've welcomed me here.
Right. But this is your space, your larger space, so you're welcoming me.
But thank you for coming. I wanted to ask you and to eventually talk to Joy and, well, as many people as will from the area about Basin and about being in Montana. But I guess we could start with the residency and the history of the residency and your...
And my involvement?
Yeah.
My involvement is more recent. When Joy comes on, she's one of the co-founders, so she'll have more to say about the early years. But Basin is a town of 250 people, and the Montana Artist Refuge is an artist residency program in this town. We have two historic buildings.
I'm not hearing you for some reason. I'm not hearing me either. I'm sorry. So that's why I'm... But I can read our levels, so things are fine.
Okay. So it's an artist residency program in Basin. We have two historic buildings. One is the old, what would you call it, dry goods store, the Diot, that we're looking at right now out of Erica's second-story window. And then the building that we're in is the Hewitt State Bank. It was also the Masonic Hall. And so in these two buildings, we have four living spaces with studios and our office for artists to come and spend from 1 to 9 months doing their work. And we have kind of a political purpose. We want to encourage free expression, and I feel like free expression these days is really not encouraged at all. And I think it's very important, especially in these times where artists have more opportunities to create, to follow their instincts and their spirits, and to give that example to other people, to let other people feel the freedom from the arts, through the arts, that artists do.
Sorry.
Well, that's what we really want to do here. So we raise money so that we can support residencies. We know that people who come here have their homes in wherever they live. Some of them come from out of the country. A lot of them come from out of state. A few come from in state. But all of them are maintaining homes and lives somewhere else for the most part. So we try to offer scholarships or financial support whenever possible, and so that it's not a burden. While a person's here, though, we don't cook meals for them like some residencies do. We don't have many requirements of our artists either. They're just free to be here to do whatever it is they need to do. It might be to just sit and stare out the window and think, or it might be to take long walks and rejuvenate or their spirits, or it could be to create a body of work in these large 600 square foot studios where they can paint or sculpt big. So it's up to them. If possible, we'd love to bring the artists into the community beyond Basin, into the nearby communities of Helena, which is about 40 miles away, and Butte, which is about 30 miles away. We like to bring our artists into there because that's a lot of where our funding base is. Mm-hmm. You can't get your funding base from 250 people in Basin.
Oh, right.
And most of the people in Basin know of the refuge, but they're not necessarily the type of person who would financially support it. It's a very blue-collar town, and a lot of retired miners, retired loggers, a few hippies, a few artists. There's no grocery store. There's no gas station. There's a post office. And now we're down to one bar instead of two. And a coffee shop, and that's about it.
Oh, the pizza The pizza place has a bar in it as well. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, the Leaning Tower of Pizza. Yeah, there is a pizza place now, and they have a bar. So we used to have two with the Silver Saddle.
Right.
But now we have one. Anyway, every town in Montana has at least two bars. I don't care how small it is. So we're a one-bar town. Anyway, that's Basin. And we're right in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. We're right, we're about, what, 10 miles from the Continental Divide. You cross it going from here to Butte. So it's the middle of the, it's kind of the foothills of the Rockies, even though it's right on the Continental Divide. I think it's at about 5,500 feet from sea level. And it's very beautiful any time of the year. Right now it's early summer, it's been raining, it's green.
Yeah, I was wondering about the green, if it's just a special blip in the calendar.
Yes.
Seeing it this green.
Yes. You know, shades of green here are different than shades of green other places. You learn to appreciate the subtleties of green.
I was just talking about that with Susan yesterday. It's amazing how many kinds of green.
But it's not that, I mean, there's certainly the green of people's lawns, you know, mm-hmm. that green. And there's those chartreuse greens that sometimes you see in early foliage. But the greens of Montana are more sagey. This is dry land. It's arid, semi-arid, high plateau country, and low rainfall, alkaline soil. So you tend to the grayer sides of green.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all the shades of the various conifers. Where we are, the forests are all conifers. There's no deciduous trees except for cottonwoods and some aspens along the creek beds. So, and then the shrubs and bushes and along the bottom country. You learn to just love this color. And it is a kind of a blip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as soon as the snow goes, and sometimes that takes a while, it starts greening up maybe in late April or May. And if we get rainfall like we have this year, sometimes it stays green like this into July, and we are so happy. We exclaim, oh, it's July and it's still green. But by that I mean the ground. You
right.
know, the trees stay green. Then it starts browning down. In the fall, you have the contrast. It's really funny when the nights start getting cold. Everything becomes, I don't know if it's a rarefication of the atmosphere or what, but all the colors get more heightened. So even though the grasses are brown, there's a kind of a brilliance because of something in the atmosphere with that fall color. And all of the plants, if you were to be here after the first frost, the plants that can withstand it, their colors just go bright. I think it's so that they can attract every insect possible so that they can go to seed before it's too late. So that's fun. I love autumn. Spring here is so unpredictable. I mean, it's luscious to see the green come back, but it's so unpredictable weather-wise that really probably my favorite season is fall.
I feel like even in New York, spring is, you never know what you're going to get. And here you're even further north and higher. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've noticed that even while you've been here, I think, the unpredictable weather.
Definitely. Yeah, and it feels like every day starts as one thing and ends as another. Or maybe it ends as the same thing, but with three things have happened in between. it's pretty amazing. Dramatic. So how did they get you involved in the residency here, and where did you come from before?
I have a circuitous route. I've been in Montana since the late 60s, living in Helena, which is the capital, and I've always been associated with the arts through my association with the Archie Bray Foundation and the Holter Museum of Art. And I've always collected ceramics. And it's interesting, I've also collected painting by Nan Parsons,
mm-hmm.
who's an artist here in Basin, and one of the co-founders of the refuge. So So I knew the women who started the refuge. I knew them through their music. You know, they had a band called Cheap Cologne. And they all played in it. And I used to come to the Cheap Cologne dances at Boulder Hot Springs. It was then called the Diamond F. Uh-huh. And that's in Boulder, which is about 7 miles away. So I had an association, slight association, with the women from Basin. And so I used to come to the jazz brunch. And then I met one of the co-founders, Joy Lewis, and I got more involved through her. And I started being on a grants writing committee to try and help them raise money. And then when they lost their newly hired executive director 2 years ago in April, and it was right before the brunch, the jazz brunch, okay, our annual event, I stepped in, and so that's how it happened. I was reluctant. It's a lot of work, mm-hmm, but I've had so much fun. It's good, solid work, honest work, good work for a good purpose, and the people are wonderful, and it's fun, and it's creative. So for me, having come from teaching high school biology, teaching high school chemistry, being involved in a teenage chemical dependency treatment program, working for the state in their HIV/AIDS program, doing consulting, teaching yoga, who knows? I've come to this, and this plus teaching yoga really feels
a nice balance.
A nice balance, yes. Yeah.
In your head and in your body.
In my head and in my body and in my heart, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I get to be creative, dream up things, interesting things, and be around creative people. We love meeting the residents and seeing their work. It's just so exciting every time, every month, every 2 months, to get a whole new group.
Yeah, I bet. It sounds exciting and also emotionally exhausting, potentially, too.
Yeah.
To sort of connect with so many people coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you get used to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to you a little bit about how you curate who you have here at one time?
We have a residency selection committee. We have one for visual artists and one for writers. And so we have writers on one, plus Joy, who's the residency coordinator. And then Joy sits on the visual artist selection committee as well, and with two or three visual artists. And we're getting more and more people who are skilled and creating in technical fields, mm-hmm, like photography and video. So we really need to expand our selection committee, mm-hmm, to get somebody from that area,
mm-hmm,
because our painters look at that new kind of work and they don't know exactly how to judge it. We also probably need a photographer on our residency selection. So everybody, we have an application process with a deadline that's now one deadline a year, June 15th, for all residencies that run November through July. We don't shut down August, September, October, but those are special residencies. August being for MFA graduates from certain institutions, MFA schools that are coordinating with us.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there's three MFA artists coming in August. And the participating schools right now are the University of Montana School of Writing and the San Francisco Art Institute.
Okay.
And we're really working with the University of Minnesota School of Art, and then we want one other, perhaps a school that for composers, mm-hmm, for masters in composing. So we'll have a writer, a musician, and two visual artists. But that's in August, and those deadlines are set by the participating schools. And then in September, we have our American Indian Artist Residency, where we populate the refuge with American Indian artists. And that deadline is July 15th. And then we have our writer's residency in October, which is supported by two very successful young writers who were born and raised in Helena. And they're supporting that residency.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these residencies are fully funded. And the October residency will be held in conjunction with the Montana Festival of the Book, which is the last weekend of September, and the Helena Festival of the Book, which is held the middle weekend of October. So there's opportunities for them to participate in those festivals and to get an idea of the writing going on in this area and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so the people send all their materials in, and their application process, the application process is described on the website. We can send it to people, or they can get it on the web. And then the committee meets, and we pick probably the top people with that we want, and we're looking at need, at talent, certainly talent, the quality of the work, and then also the mix of people as well, if we have that luxury. And then we offer them the residency, and we go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So Joy takes care of a lot of that. I'm primarily administration, fundraising, mm-hmm. program development, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Yeah, it seems like that there's a lot of synergy created by just having different disciplines here all at once. You know, it's been exciting, like, having Susan Reed on the radio and talking to her about her process, and then getting to know Eric's process a little bit more, and also Bill downstairs doing a very much like in the field of photography. So it just seems like a really nice synergy.
Mm-hmm. And then Barbara being a visual artist.
Yes.
Yeah, and Eric being a composer.
I just take her for granted because I like her work so well and know it pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah,
I shouldn't take it for granted.
Yeah, and it's watercolor, right?
Yeah, I don't know if she does. I think it is watercolor, not gouache. She's going to come talk about it.
Oh, great. Oh, good.
Later in the week.
So your radio audience will get an idea. And then, of course, there's Dove's painting.
Yeah, he's a very prolific guy.
Yeah.
He thinks the stage is his.
Yeah. This is his art area.
Yeah, and his dance area.
Yes.
He reenacts some of the Singing in the Rain bits. I don't know if you've seen it. We watch it a lot. We watch the little dance numbers.
Oh, uh-huh. So we have dance going on, and we have had dance companies here.
Exactly. Exactly. A resident dancer.
Resident dancer. Yes, and scooter rider.
Yeah. So I've been so impressed. You spoke earlier about the women of the residency. Like, I'm so impressed with the women that surrounds this place and embrace this place and make it happen. It seems kind of extraordinary.
I think it is extraordinary, and I'm looking out Erica's window down on the Diot, and I'm seeing my car getting packed up for my ride. But I will say that I do feel like the women here are extraordinary, and I've always felt this way about Montana. I grew up in Southern California, and I didn't know anything when I came up here. I was first visited here when I was a sophomore in college and came up here in the middle of my senior year. And people in Montana, it might not be so noticeable now, but in the late 60s, and certainly probably still now, relatively speaking, we have to make what we want to have.
Mm-hmm.
We have to create it. We've had to create our not only our physical spaces, but our emotional spaces, our creative spaces. We've had to bring that culture into our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And so the women who founded this really wanted culture in their community.
Mm-hmm.
And so they made it happen. And so it is partially for them. But also it's because they so fully believe in the creative spirit that they want everybody to have that. And they want that interaction themselves. So we bring world art to Basin,
mm-hmm.
and Basin to the world. And yes, there's an extraordinary devotion. I think also in Montana there is an incredible devotion to the community of Montana. Montana is like a very large, very small town.
Right.
A very small town, the whole state, mm-hmm. with very long streets. Because the whole place is a community. And none of us can go anywhere else in the state and not run into somebody we know, because we all interact with each other so much, like you do in a community. And that's another wonderful thing, and I think you're probably sensing that here.
Absolutely. I was just saying to Mark yesterday how it's so nice to be in a place where everybody seems so committed to being here, because I guess if you're not, you're not going to make it happen here. And it's so unusual. I feel like most places we go, like it seems almost counter human nature, but in most places you go, people are kind of comparing themselves to other places, or always like, oh, well, maybe someday then I'll go there, or there's always this sense of comparison or longing for something that it isn't, and I don't get that sense here at all. Everybody seems very much here and not in a like, oh, yeah, I wish I was there, but I'm here now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone seems very here and present and committed. And I think it's the first time I've experienced that. At least in a long time, it's the first time I've experienced that.
Well, that's a wonderful thing to experience, and that's a wonderful compliment. It's interesting because about a month ago I was at a bonfire and a barbecue. These people in Helena, they live kind of off the grid out at the north end of the valley, of the Helena Valley. And we went to a barbecue there to celebrate somebody's birthday, and everybody who was there was a little outside the box. I mean, they were definitely, because they live in a little one-room building that they've created themselves, and they have a deck, and they have an outhouse, and I think they have running water now.
Wow.
They have a well and a pump. But anyway, very, very, very simply, they might have power. They might have electricity. I'll have to think about that. You know, I'm not sure. But in any way, in any event, she said to me, that was such a wonderful party. Everybody who was there was so content and at home with themselves, so accepting of themselves. And we wondered why we felt that way with this bunch of people. And we realize they all kind of live a little bit outside of the norm, for whatever reason, in whatever way. And it was wonderful to experience that. It's so accepting of self. So everybody just lets down and becomes themselves and accepting of everybody else. And I think there is an element of that in Montana.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So with that, I'm going to have to head north.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Claudia.
Yeah. And I look forward to listening to your program.
Okay. I'll send you guys. I'll let you know when it's up.
Okay. Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'll stop this.